Chapter 31, verses 10 through 31, 22 verses, they are an alphabetic acrostic. That is, each verse begins with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which is unusual. Suppose I were to ask you to give 22 traits of a successful athlete, and I said, you have to have 22 of them, and each one has to begin with a different letter of the alphabet. Now, what do you think your list would look like? It would be an odd list because you wouldn't organize it the way you might normally organize it. There would be some randomness about it. You'd probably press a few points. What do you do with the letter X? What do you do with the letter V? What do you do with the letter Q? Those are weird letters, and trying to make your subject matter fit that. So the arrangement of the text follows the alphabet. It's not a logically conceived text. There is a logic behind it. I think there is an order to it. But because it is primarily alphabetically arranged, the thought process is a little bit different than how we might do it in modern times. So understand the style of it. It very much reflects wisdom ideals. If you compare what's said in chapter 31 to what is said about wisdom back in chapters 1 through 9, mainly chapter 1 through 9 and particularly chapters 8 and 9, a lot of things are said about wisdom that are also said about this wife. She's hard to find. She's priceless. Both present themselves, quote, in the gates. That is, in a public way. Both use and employ wise speech. So there are similarities between them. And then finally, we need to pay attention to the perspective that is presented in this. Having PowerPoint issues today. Throughout Proverbs, and starting as early as chapter 1, there's a phrase that comes up over and over again. My son, listen. My son, do this. That phrase occurs over and over and over again in the book of Proverbs. And when you get to chapter 31, it's a similar kind of approach. Look at the beginning of chapter 31. The words of King Lemuel, the oracle which his mother taught him. This is mama saying, son, listen to me. Typically how we want to read Proverbs 31, verses 10 through 31, typically how we want to read this description of womanhood, we say this is the ideal for women to pursue. Actually, how this text is arranged and is consistent with the whole book of Proverbs, it's actually the kind of woman that King Lemuel ought to pursue. This is not first and foremost about what should a woman be, but what kind of woman a man should pursue. It's actually written from a male perspective. It's also written from the perspective of wealth. This person does not have a minimum wage job. This person is not on food stamps. This person is not struggling to make ends meet and live paycheck. This is a wealthy perspective. The family described in Proverbs 31 had money, and they had means. Now, I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the end, but just file that away and keep it in your head. So those are some initial things to pay attention to as we go through the text. This is quite a woman, and you see that in every part of the description. First of all, it describes her value to others. In verses 10 through 12, an excellent wife who can find. That opening question is a key to understanding it. Does that question mean that it is not possible to find a woman like this, or is it simply saying this kind of woman is hard to find? And I would argue that's the point that's being made. This is no ordinary woman, which means that this kind of woman is not easily found. That's worth considering, particularly from a male perspective. He's saying this is the kind of Lemuel's mother is saying this is the kind of woman that you should look for. But understand, she's like finding precious jewels. She's rare. She's hard to find. Don't expect that the first person you go out with is going to meet these criteria. This woman is hard to find. She's rare, for her worth is far above jewels. In fact, in relationship to her husband, the heart of her husband trusts in her and he will have no lack of gain. One of the biggest problems I see in marriages is lack of trust between the husband and the wife. That is at the root of so many marital problems. Hubby doesn't trust wife, wife doesn't trust hubby. There's a problem there. But this description starts out with that point. In this relationship, the husband trusts absolutely this woman. He trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. He trusts her, but he benefits from that kind of trust. That's an important point. Then verse 12, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. In the book of Proverbs, it sometimes talks about good and evil. Mostly it talks about wise and foolish. Good and evil, righteousness and unrighteousness, are couched in terms of wisdom and folly. It's couched in terms, it's seen in terms of work and ethics and practices and habits. So what this text is emphasizing, this woman demonstrates her goodness by the way that she lives. Her husband trusts her, and she does everything she can to benefit him. It's a mutual kind of relationship. And she does this all the days of her life. So it starts out with her value to others, primarily her value to her husband. There's a good relationship between them. Secondly, it describes her work on behalf of others. I would say that probably the rest of chapter 31 elaborates on what's said in verses 10 through 12. Her price is far above jewels. What does that mean? Her husband trusts her. She does good and not evil. What does that mean? What does that look like? And I think starting in verse 13, the rest of the chapter is devoted to that particular point. What does this look like in practical terms? This woman has an amazing work ethic. Notice, she looks for the finest of goods. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. That's significant, second part of that line. Dealing with wool and dealing with flax, they were highly intensive hand operations. This is not saying just that she sews. Later, she sews garments. This woman makes her own material. This woman makes her own thread. Now, I've known a lot of women who sewed. I've never met anyone who made their own thread, who made their own fabric. But that's exactly what this is describing. These were labor-intensive processes. Shaving the wool off the animal, cleaning it, sometimes bleaching it or coloring it. Taking the fibers out of the plants, in the case of linen, and creating it and spinning it and dealing with it in such a way that when you're done, you actually have thread and you have fabric. Those were expensive items, so she pursues the finest of fabrics and she delights in working with them. She's like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. Now, this is not talking about her going out and providing food. It's talking about her bringing in food, bringing food in from afar. I had a friend of mine in Louisville. I don't remember how often they did it, but periodically his wife and daughters, he had a wife and three daughters, they would have international food night in their house. They would find some kind of recipe they hadn't tried before, and it had to be from some other country, from some other culture they had not experienced. And he said sometimes it was really good. Not always. But here's a woman who delights in fine food, fine exotic food. She brings her food in from afar. This is for her family. It says that she works long hours. In verse 15, she rises while it is still night. She gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. Now, this is interesting. She has workers within her household. I would expect that they would be doing the cooking. Not her. She's cooking for them. Cooking for her household. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. How verse 15 begins and how verse 18 ends tells me that that's one unit. It starts early in the morning. She's busy all day dealing with things pertaining to her household, even dealing with things about herself. It even talks here about self-care on her part. She girds herself with strength and makes her arm strong. She's providing for the family, but she's not neglecting herself either. She starts out early and she works until late at night. In some people's minds, the wife and mother is just a martyr. She gives for everybody else, but she doesn't take care of herself. That's not what this text says. Oh, she's very much concerned about the affairs of her household, what's going on. But she makes sure that she is provided for as well. Everything she does affects everybody in the household. She uses her money wisely. In verse 16, she considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. Now, every real estate transaction, every major purchase that my wife and I have ever made, we talk about it. To be blunt, I'd be nervous if she went out and bought a house and didn't ask me about it. She'd probably be nervous too. I'd be nervous if she just went out and bought a car and said, oh, by the way, we got a new car. I'd be worried. She'd probably be worried too. But here's a man. Remember what it said in the opening verses? He trusts in her. He trusts her enough that she's got her own budget from her own, not just savings, but from her own earnings. She plants. She's making money. She's bringing income into the house. No wonder hubby's okay with that. And she does these real estate transactions. I get the sense that here is an astute businesswoman. She's all business. It goes on to talk about her sense of discipline. She makes herself strong. She takes care of herself. And she has a sense that she is worthwhile. Now, verses 19 and 20, I think, are the turning point in the psalm. There are two references to hands. There are references to her hands all the way through this, which I think is significant. Here's a hardworking woman. But there's a shift, a very subtle shift in verses 19 and 20. She stretches out her hand to the distaff. That word stretch, and it's used again in the second part of verse 20, simply means just to reach out. So she reaches out, and that emphasizes her work ethic. But a slightly different word is used in verse 20. She extends her hand to the poor. That word means to open your hands. She opens up her resources to the poor. That shift goes in the up through verse 19. It's emphasizing, not exclusively, but it's emphasizing her relationship to her household. But now, opening her hands to the poor, I think, shifts the emphasis to a more community-minded mentality. Not only is she concerned about her household, she's concerned about her community as well. And so she reaches out. She extends her hand to the poor. She stretches out her hands to the needy. And then starting in verse 20, it talks about her impact on others. Not exclusively her family, not exclusively in her community, but it's reaching more outward at this point. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes sure that everybody is covered. She has preparations. By the way, that's a huge point of emphasis in the book of Psalms. Working not just for the moment, but working for the future. Using your resources not just to buy something now, but to lay aside something for future generations. Laying ahead for that snowy or rainy day. She does what wisdom says ought to be done. She makes coverings for herself, and her clothing is fine linen and purple. That's the second reference to self-care in the text. We saw one back in verse 17, which is her care about her health. And then here in verse 22, she makes coverings for herself, her clothing is fine linen and purple. I don't want you to think for a moment that this is about vanity, because later, it says in verse 30, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. This isn't about her just being a peacock. This isn't just her wanting to be the best dressed person in the house. She buys designer stuff while everybody else gets second hands and hand-me-downs. This is a reflection upon her relationship to the community and her family. She dresses well, not to be showy, not to get people to look at her, but simply an index of who and what she is. It goes on to say that her husband is in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Her activities free him up to do and be what he ought to be. She takes care of things at home so that he can go out and do whatever business he's got. And largely because of her activities, he is known. One of the things I learned after we had kids, and particularly after our kids started going to school, I lost my identity. I didn't know who I was anymore. After I got married, I'd get phone calls. Hey, Cloyce, how you doing? Good. Let me speak to Alethea. I wasn't important. Nobody called me anymore. They called me to the extent that they wanted to talk to my wife. And then after we had kids, we start getting phone calls. Hey, Mr. Sutton, can I speak to Hannah? Okay. I'd go to the school. Oh, you're Hannah's dad. Or you're Nate's dad. Or you're Esther's dad. I had no identity. I became known through my family. And that's how this woman is. They know her husband because they know her. It's a package deal. So her husband is known in the gates. She makes linen garments and sells them. Now, it's interesting that earlier her activities were centered on the home. She would buy land for the family. She would bring food in from merchants from afar. But now she's reaching out into the community. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. So now she's reaching out into the community and making an economic impact. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. Second time, it talks about her not being worried about things. She's a planner. She has plan A, B, C, D, and E, maybe even F. Well, we're going to do this, but if that doesn't work, we're going to do this, and if that doesn't work, we're going to do this. She always has a contingency. She's looking ahead to the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Verse 27, the second part of verse 27, has got to be the biggest understatement in the text. There are many things that she is, but idleness is not among them. You've seen that up to this point. Then the last thing it talks about, though, is the praise that she receives from others. This is the product of everything that has come up through verse 27. What do you do with a woman like that? You sing her praises. You tell her what she is worth to you and the family and the community. It says in verse 28, her children rise up and bless her. How many households is that pretty typical? Mom, what usually follows that? It's usually not words of praise. It's usually a criticism, a complaint, a request. Her children rise up and praise her, as does her husband. Her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. He's aware of other women, but no one can take her place. And then here's the commentary at the end. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. She understands that looks and etiquette and charm and a flattering tongue, they have limitations. They will take you only so far. She's more concerned about a reality that lingers. She's more concerned with wise, godly character and behavior. That's how she has built her life. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. She understands this is what it is. Now, that's interesting, that phrase, the fear of the Lord. It almost begins the book and it almost ends the book. Chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. The book begins with a declaration of why wisdom is important. But remember what I said earlier, throughout the book, the emphasis is upon the young man who needs wisdom. My son, listen to this. My son, pay attention to this. The book ends with a declaration of fearing God, but this time it's describing a woman. It's describing a woman who has embodied these things that men ought to pursue. The ending is verse 31, give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. In some regard, her reward is simply her work. She does this and she gets the natural consequences of it. But there's also this admonition to her husband and children that she ought to be rewarded accordingly. What are we to make of this great, great text? A few observations. First of all, some omissions. This text doesn't talk much about religion. The only thing it comes close to is that last statement, she fears the Lord. In the context of Jewish faith, she's the kind of woman who practices Deuteronomy 6. She loves the Lord with all of her heart, with all of her soul, with all of her might. But it doesn't mention any religious activities. That doesn't mean it's unimportant, but that's just not the emphasis of this text. If I were to ask women, so what do you think you ought to be doing as a wife and a mother? My suspicion is you'd be talking about having Bible studies with your kids, being part of a local church, that kind of thing. This text doesn't mention that. Not that it's unimportant, but that's not the emphasis of the text. This text does not mention her being all schmoozy with husband. Doesn't talk about any romance. It doesn't talk about a lot of things. That doesn't mean they are unimportant. It simply means that that's not the focal point of this particular text. So there are some significant omissions in the book of Proverbs. Another thing. Doesn't say a single word about her being subject to her husband. Submissive to her husband. I'm not saying she isn't. It just doesn't say that in this text. So be careful when you come to Proverbs 31 because there's a lot of things that we assume are in there that simply aren't mentioned. That leads me to a second point. Proverbs 31 gets abused a lot. People look at her work ethic and say, well, that's the kind of wife I want. And what they're thinking is, I want a servant. She's not a servant. It mentions servants in the text, but she's not one of them. Mentions that. How far, if you look at this text as, here's a woman who's just a workhorse, I'm going to work her to death, this is the kind of woman I want kind of thing, how far would you press the details? This woman has servants. This woman does real estate. This woman has all kinds of things that I know a lot of husbands would never give to their wives, including respect and praise. So be careful not only what is not there, but be careful that you don't abuse the text. I will hear children say, well, I want my mom to be, and they're describing Proverbs, I want a Proverbs 31 mom. Great, I hope you have it. Let me ask you this. Are you willing to be a Proverbs 31 child? Do you remember what verse 28 said? Her children rise up and bless her. Are you willing to praise your mother? Are you willing to acknowledge the hard work that she does? Are you willing, as the last verse says, to give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gate? By the way, I mentioned omissions. She doesn't tuck them into bed at night. She doesn't kiss their boo-boos. She does not appear in this text to be a highly affectionate woman. She's all business. So are you saying that's the kind of mom you want? I'm not saying that this woman isn't affectionate, but Proverbs 31 just doesn't talk about it. So be careful what you ask for. What about Proverbs 31 and husbands? I have heard men say, I want a Proverbs 31 wife. And they're thinking strictly in terms of the work ethic and the sacrifice and all of that. So I will ask you, are you the kind of husband that's mentioned here? Remember that what I said about the perspective? This is from an upper middle class or even upper class perspective. Do you as a husband provide the kind of means that her husband does? This is a wealthy family. Do you trust your wife? Verse 11, the first thing it said about her husband, the heart of her husband trusts in her. When I hear most men complaining about Proverbs 31 and their own wives, there is no trust there. So if you want a Proverbs 31 wife, the first thing you need to do is be a Proverbs 31 husband and start trusting your wife. That's the first thing that needs to happen. Notice in verse 16, she considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. This man trusts her so much that she has her own money, she has her freedom, she is free to go out and do her business without hubby constantly putting his fingerprints on it. If you want a Proverbs 31 wife, you need to be a Proverbs 31 husband. Notice that in verse 28, he gives her praise. Verse 31, he gives her reward. I know a lot of husbands that want a servant for a wife, but they're not willing to share in the family's prosperity, the family's blessings. I know a lot of husbands, as soon as there's any money that's free, well, I need some new golf clubs. I need a new TV. I need a new car. I need a new bass boat. I need. Here is a husband who shares in the prosperity with his wife. So, men, if you want a Proverbs 31 wife, you need to be a Proverbs 31 husband. And then finally, women and Proverbs 31. This is a hard text. I think it presents womanhood in a very ideal way. Now, I've known all of my life, I have known a lot of Proverbs 31 women. Not a one of them looked exactly like this. I have known all kinds of women who were excellent quilters and seamstresses and cooks and housekeepers, and they were smart with money and they knew what to say to their family, and not a one of them sheared sheep, made their own thread and their own fabric. This is a very idealized portrait of women, and the emphasis is on work ethic. That doesn't mean she's irreligious, because the next last verse is she fears the Lord. She is all of this. I think verse 30 in some ways is a concluding statement. Do you want to know why she is what she is? Do you want to know why she does what she does? It's because of her love of God, her fear of God. That has shaped her character. You want to be a Proverbs 31 wife? Start by fearing the Lord and letting that shape everything that you think, everything that you do, everything that you say. As with wisdom, wisdom is hard to find. But this kind of gift, the gift of this kind of woman, is a gift from God. I think that's one of the points that is made in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 18. Proverbs says that wisdom is hard to find, and it says that this woman is hard to find. But notice in Proverbs 18, verse 22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. And the very next chapter, chapter 19, verse 14, house and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Maybe if men and women spent a whole lot more time in prayer, number one, about being what they ought to be, and then finding who they ought to find, a lot of marriages wouldn't be in the kind of problems in the shape that they are in. To be a Proverbs 31 family requires that each person fulfills their roles. It requires that each person start with the fear of the Lord. It means that each person respects the rights, the needs, and the abilities of the other person in the household. You trust them. You respect them. And that becomes the basis of how you treat them. As I said earlier, people have a dim view of women in the Bible, and particularly when you get to the book of Proverbs. But I think Proverbs 31 is as high a standard as you're going to find. And I have met through the years, I have known a lot of women who would claim to be feminists, and they say, well, the Bible just has a horrible view. I would challenge any feminist alive to do this for 1 year and then get back to me. Let's have a conversation. This is as high an ideal as you're going to find anywhere in any kind of literature. Let's go to our Father in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for the gift of life itself. We thank you so much for the gift of the home. In the very beginning, you created man as male and female, and in that you gave us the very definition of marriage. We realize there are differences between men and women, and we need to learn how to celebrate that and enjoy those differences and learn how to live within them. We thank you so much for texts like this. We thank you so much for the women that we have known in our lives who embody the ideals of Proverbs 31. On the one hand, Father, never, ever let us give up the ideals that are proclaimed there, but on the other hand, help us be realistic in the way that we treat our wives and mothers. Give them the respect and the rewards that are due them in their lives, and help us encourage them along the way. Father, help us to be like your people in every regard. We pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. If you're here this morning and you've never obeyed Jesus as Lord, one of the things we try to do at the end of each of our services is to give you an opportunity to become a Christian. And for those of us who are Christians, maybe there's some kind of sin or problem in your life that needs to be addressed. We can help you in any way. We invite you to come forward while we stand and sing.
What will you do with Jesus? The question comes to you, and you must give an answer, for something you must do. What shall it be? What shall it be? What shall your answer be? What will you do with Jesus? Oh, what shall your answer be? What will you do with Jesus? It comes by night.